Hi, you're listening to the Full Life Podcast with Melanie Lynham.
I don't know. I guess it was healthy that my family maybe didn't put so much attention on it. Because maybe if they did, it would have been my whole identity, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of a part of me for a long time. And I guess it still is, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's more like a journey of overcoming rather than, you know, a journey of limitation.
Hey guys, Dan here, Mel's husband. Well, sadly, Mel has a touch of laryngitis this week, so I get to introduce you to our guest, Amy Duet. Amy is a mental health and women's body image advocate with a Bachelor of Psychology with honours. Her personal experience with scoliosis and living with chronic pain has left Amy resilient and compassionate toward other people and their suffering. On today's show, Mel and Amy talk about Amy's own struggle with body image and something called self-compassion, what that is and how it can help us to establish a healthy body image. Amy also shares what it is like living with chronic pain and how having a heavenly mindset has helped her to cope with this. Here's Mel's conversation with Amy Duet.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining us on the Full Life Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
How about we start by you telling us how old you are and where do you come from?
Yeah, sure. So I'm 22 years old and I'm from Victoria, Vancouver Island in British Columbia, Canada.
Wow. So how long have you been in Australia for then?
I've lived here for about 16 years. Yeah.
So you've just graduated from university. You did a Bachelor of Psychology with honours. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks.
So where to now?
Yep. So I'm just about to start. I start next week my Master's of Clinical Psychology at USC. So I'm doing that for the next 2 years. Yeah.
Wow. So what's the end game? What would you like to do with it?
Yeah. So the end goal for me is to work as a psychologist in private practice, assisting clients with a range of needs, whether that be depression, anxiety, you know, stress management, body image concerns, chronic pain, a whole host of stuff. Yeah.
And you're working at the moment. What do you do?
Yeah. So I'm an admin assistant at a psychology clinic. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got your foot in the door.
Yeah.
And great. Kind of rubbing shoulders with other psychologists.
Yeah, I've met so many amazing psychologists. I think we're really lucky on the coast. There's really, really, really great quality psychologists here. And they really, you get to see the behind the scenes of it all. And they really do care about their clients. They care about people. And I think it's a really good thing to see.
That's excellent. And you're a very beautiful, loving, genuine person. And I reckon that you'd be such a great psychologist.
Thank you.
Have you known for a while that you wanted to be one?
Yeah, I think so. I think even when I was in school, like I was always like the go-to person if someone had like a problem or they just needed someone to listen. I think people, you know, they want to be heard out. They want to know that their feelings are validated and what they're going through, you know, is legitimate and it means something and that they're not overreacting or anything. And they just need someone who will just listen to them and, yeah, make space for them.
So have you ever, like, this is a very personal question.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a psychologist yourself?
I have, yeah. I saw a psychologist a year and a half ago. And she was lovely. She was a Christian psychologist. And she really helped me, you know, work through a few things. And I just had a really great experience. And I was also really curious to see what it was like in a therapy session, actually being on the other side of it, being a patient, being a client. And yeah, I had such a great experience with her and we're friends now. And it's great. She's taught me a lot.
So that was able to help you see, you know, how your potential clients would really benefit from seeing a psychologist.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Excellent. Was it a hard decision to go and see one? Like, was it hard for you? Because I know that for some people it can be a bit challenging to make that step to go and see a psychologist.
Yeah, I think for me, I think it is important, you know, if you are going through something, it's okay to reach out. I think that it's not a bad thing. And I think that sometimes there's a stigma around, you know, If you're seeing a psychologist, you're weak or you're not able to process things and you should be, which I don't think is true at all. I think it can be really beneficial to have someone, especially someone who's really objective, listen in and kind of give their input or help you work through some things.
Mm.
And yeah, I found it to be a really positive experience.
In your opinion, do you think, just from what you've seen and heard and possibly at uni with case studies and stuff, do you think that women are more likely to take that step and go see a psychologist than men are, or do you think it might just be
That's a good question. Before working in private practice, I would have said definitely women, mm-hmm. but recently a lot of men have actually started seeing a psychologist, and we're getting a lot of new referrals from GPs that are of men. So I think it's kind of equaled out. I think it's a balance, which is really great, because in the past I think men have kind of put on a manly man kind of like don't seek out help, you should be tough and deal with your feelings type of thing.
Yeah, you hear stories of like even within a marriage of a sometimes it's the woman that is more willing to go in and get counseling and get help, but sometimes the man can be a bit hesitant. So I was just wondering if that was a statistic there, but that's really good to hear that.
Yeah,
you know, we'll just stop because there's a teeny tiny spider that's floating near your head.
Oh, no, where is it?
No, it's okay.
Oh, there it is.
Can you see it? Got it.
Okay. Hello, friend.
stay away.
Yeah.
So you are a mental health and women's body image advocate and received a medal from your university recently. So tell us more about that. First of all, what is a mental health and women's body advocate? And then why did your university give you a medal for it?
These are great questions. So being an advocate for mental health and women's body image, I guess, basically means speaking out about it and conducting research, which is what I did through my thesis through my uni course for honors. So I did a thesis on self-compassion and looking at how that could be used to help women with body image concerns improve their body image perception and improve their mental health overall. So I think as an advocate for that, it means that I'm really passionate about kind of finding answers or ways to help people who are struggling with these issues. And the uni medal, which was awesome. It was so cool. Such a great experience was for my work, my volunteer work and my work through the uni as well, which was pretty exciting.
So tell us about your volunteer work.
Yeah, so I've been doing a range of things over the last 5 years. I've volunteered at the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen in Nambour, which is great. I did that for about 4 years. And I also volunteered for a group therapy support group at Eloff and Andrews Clinical Psychology for kids with ASD and ADHD. So I was a therapist assistant and helped run that program. And I also volunteered for Red Frogs. So I helped at Uni Orientation Week and at Varsity and USC Central, getting especially foreign students, getting them settled into the uni. And I also did volunteer work at USC Active Minds, which is a mental health support network to help people, help uni students who are struggling mental health-wise, creating a safe space for them to kind of connect and feel supported. Yeah.
Wow. So how did you even find the time for all of this?
I guess, I don't know, time management, and I'm really passionate about it. So I just make time for it because I think it's important and I think it's what God's kind of called me to do.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly. Yeah. He's clearly really written this on your heart, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So when you were choosing your thesis, what led you down the path of choosing mental health and women's body image?
Yeah. So for me personally, I think I, at times as a woman, have struggled with body image. I think the media especially plays a really key part in promoting this really unrealistic and unattainable body image for women, you know, this ultra thin like body that just isn't realistic for most women. And I think as someone with scoliosis as well, I've struggled with body image and not really fitting the mold. And I was always curious to find ways to improve that. And self-compassion is a really great new kind of solution that's been up and coming in research. And self-compassion is basically treating yourself the way you treat a good friend. So it's comprised of like three main components. So it's mindfulness. So being aware of your thoughts, but not in an overly judgmental way. Mm-hmm. Self-kindness is the second part of it. And that's just showing kindness to yourself, not being super critical, you know, that inner critic that's like, you have to be like this. You need to be like this. Being a little bit more kind to yourself. And the third component is common humanity. And that's realizing that a lot of people face struggles and that you're not the only one who maybe is struggling with body image issues, that there are others out there. And the statistics do show there are a lot of women out there who even feel like they're not good enough. And
wow,
yeah, it's really heartbreaking that that's such a prominent issue today, especially with social media and things like that. So I was really curious to see, okay, what can I look at to try and help this, help people with this problem or with this issue that they're going through? Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned that it's something that you have struggled with in the past.
Yeah.
Did you know about self-compassion at that time? How did you get through that?
No, I didn't know about self-compassion. I actually found it like by accident. I was Googling like body image concerns and it popped up literally on a like Google Scholar search. I was just looking for research. I'm a bit of a nerd. I like reading research. And I was like, self-compassion, what's this? What's this about? And I read a paper by Neff, who's the creator of self-compassion. She kind of created that term. And Christine Neff. And she had conducted a study that looked at these self-compassion meditations. And they improved body appreciation, improved self-compassion, reduced body shame and things like that. And I was like, this is so interesting. And I really liked that for me personally, it resonated with like my faith, the whole idea of like not comparing yourself to the media or to other women in general, and to really treat yourself with kindness the way you treat others with kindness. And I was like, that's really cool. There's some Christian elements in that that you can really draw out on. And the idea of common humanity, like everyone is going through something, to be aware of that and not to be isolated, because the Bible kind of talks about, you know, being a community and loving on other people and not kind of drawing away in isolation and kind of, it's self-compassion isn't, oh, poor me, I feel sorry for myself. It's more like, hang on, actually, what I'm going through is hard, but there's other people are also going through other things that are similar. And we're all not all in the same boat, but there's others of us who are experiencing these struggles. Yeah. So I literally stumbled upon that and I was like, this is such a cool study. And I was like, how can I expand it? And I found some things in the study that I was like, I could improve on this. And if I could add this, so what I did is I added guided imagery meditation. So I compared both of them to see, okay, is it self-compassion or is there another element to it that could also improve body image? Like, so these guided imagery meditations were nature focused. Mm-hmm. And so my study found that both meditations improved body image in a group of 70 women. Which was really great. They listened to them over 1 week and we compared pre and post measures of body image. So it was really exciting.
So can you explain to us what that would look like?
So the meditations. Mm-hmm. So the meditations are about 20 minutes each. And they just talk about, I'll go through the self-compassion ones.
Okay.
They talk about like, going through your body, like becoming aware of different elements of your body. And maybe if you have judgments about your stomach, just allowing yourself to have those judgments, but to not over-identify with them, to not be like, what I think about my stomach is who I am as a person. Mm-hmm. Realizing that there's more to you as a person than just what you think about your stomach. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when we get caught in if we obsess over something, that becomes our identity. So if someone's obsessing over their stomach, they are just their stomach. Yeah. And self-compassion kind of opens your awareness to actually, you're more than just your stomach. You're more than actually just your body, your personality, you know, your characteristics, your qualities, your how you treat others, you know. So you're more than just this one tiny little aspect. And then the guided imagery meditations, they just are basically just talking about nature. So it puts you into an immersive kind of state. So you imagine yourself at the beach or in a meadow, and it just identifies different sounds and everything. So that, we weren't expecting that to improve body image, but it did. And more studies are coming out about how nature, an appreciation for nature, kind of inadvertently creates an appreciation for ourselves as a whole. And really? I think that's really cool.
Why do you think that is?
I'm not 100% sure, which is why it's so exciting. There's all these new studies coming out, and one came out in December last year. So it's very recent research, so I get really excited about it, because I'm like, oh, new discoveries. Yeah. But I think maybe this is just me hypothesizing, because there's no clear answer at this stage. I think maybe creating like an awareness and appreciation for how nature is and how it works might allow us to appreciate how our body works, how it feels and how it functions, mm-hmm. and how cool that is, mm-hmm. rather than just looking at the body from an image perspective and how it just looks, how it actually functions and how it feels internally. So it's a different perspective.
Yeah, very good. And I also have an idea. Can I?
Yeah, of course you can.
That because creation. Nature is creation. I know. It's created by God, and when God made it, He said that it is good. Mm-hmm. And so focusing on something just beautiful that God has made and has called good possibly can, I don't know, maybe a subconscious level help us to identify with the fact that we are also God's beautiful creation that He has called good.
Exactly.
So,
I think maybe that's great.
That
yeah.
has a little connection there.
And it's awesome that that we kind of stumbled upon that in our study, mm-hmm. and then suddenly all these other studies started finding similar things. So it'd be great to look in that, I don't know, in future research down the track.
That's right.
Yeah.
Look into the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, great. So going back to when you, were growing up as a teenager, did you have anybody to encourage you with your own body image? Like growing up as a teenager, social media wasn't really that big, was it? I don't know.
No, it started getting...
I'm older than you.
No, it's totally fine. I think it started to really pick up when I was like in grade 10. So I was about like 15, 16. So like, you know, coming towards, I guess, mid to end teens.
Mm. Is that what you were comparing yourself with, or was it magazines or the people around you?
I think it was a bit of both. For me, magazines were still kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. This is back in like 2012, right?
Okay, yeah.
And that's when I first got Instagram. I remember it was like this new exciting thing. Mm. And I think it was more the magazines and kind of just looking at models, and especially like, I remember like Disney stars, and some of them were my age, and I was like, how do they look like that? They're my age. Yeah. Like, and I mean, I don't know if they had any plastic surgery or anything. I don't know, because they're so young, but I just remember feeling like, oh, I don't look like that. I look quite different. And when I was a lot younger, I'd never really thought about the way I looked. It didn't matter. And then all of a sudden it did. And it was just this shift. And I was like, oh, why is this an insecurity of mine? And yeah, I don't know. It kind of just started around that kind of like 15, 16 year mark. But for me personally, my faith helped me through that, and understanding that God created everyone uniquely.
Yeah.
And He designed us. That's so cool to think about. He designed every detail of us, and it's so personable, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a really beautiful thing. And I think for a long time, I didn't like the way I was designed, mm-hmm. because of my scoliosis, because of, you know, chronic pain and things like that that I'd gone through, I was kind of like, well, why am I designed like this? Why do I have this? And then I kind of learned through that, that faith is more than just a feeling. It's more than just where you're at now.
Mm.
And so I don't know. Am I explaining that right?
Yeah.
I think, and understanding creation, like you said, creation in nature, creation in us as humans, that gives you an appreciation for who you are rather than just judgments about my stomach.
I have a saying that it's not fair to compare. And it really isn't, hey, like God made us all so different. Yeah. And plus, we can't trust what we see in magazines because of, you know, their ability to edit it so much.
I know.
And then the extensions and the makeup and all those things. I actually, my daughter watches some of the Barbie movies.
Oh.
And in the Barbie movies, every single character has the exact same body shape.
Yeah.
And like they look exactly the same except they've changed maybe skin color, hair color, eye color. They're all like so thin, large bust, beautiful clothes, just gorgeous hair that is completely unrealistic. You would have to have so many extensions to get your hair looking like that. And so, I mean, and like the storylines are really nice, like they're sweet and they're lovely, especially the ones with dancing in it. And and Isabella just loves dancing, so I let her watch it. But I do say to her, I'm like, just so you know, nobody looks like that. That is a completely unrealistic view of how the human body looks, and we cannot expect to try to look like that. And it starts so young, don't you think?
Oh, as, definitely.
As young girls.
Yeah, definitely. And even, like you said, even things like Barbie movies, like you wouldn't really think, oh, this is going to have an impact, but it does. I think on the subconscious level, kind of does.
You want to be beautiful like the character.
Exactly. You want those gorgeous, luscious looks.
And
You
want the bust.
You want the bust.
A tiny waist.
Yeah.
All and, the Disney princesses.
And it's so interesting that, like, if it wasn't like that, if it was different, because we're so used to that, we're kind of like, oh, that's not right.
Yeah.
But isn't that weird, though?
That's true.
That we have that, like, oh.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I got really excited when I found in the shops a toy mermaid doll that was actually a little bit thick-waisted.
Oh, yes. So, I love that.
So there was some, like really thin ones, and then all of a sudden there was like a mermaid doll that was, you know, beautiful.
Yeah.
But did not look as skinny as the rest of them. Yeah. I was like, this is the one that I'm buying for my
daughter.
I was like so pumped that finally, you know, something that's a little bit more realistic.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just not fair, the message that it's giving our children. And I don't know how we as, you know, parents and people who are shaping the culture of this generation, how we work against that.
I think you're doing the right things, definitely, you know, reminding your children that's not realistic. That's not reality. You know, not everyone looks like that. Mm-hmm. And teaching them about creation and how we're all unique, and buying dolls that are different, you know, sizes. I think little things like that actually go a long way and would really make an impact. Definitely. Definitely
good.
Would.
That's good. I remember when I was, maybe I was about 10 years old, and I remember my mum saying something about my stomach just because my dad had been feeding me a lot of food. And so my mum was like, oh, your tummy's getting a bit big. And I remember looking at my tummy because I had nothing to compare it with.
Yeah.
As a little 10-year-old, I really had nothing to compare it with. And I remember looking down and going, what's it supposed to look like? And maybe it was a little bit round or pudgy or whatever. But I was completely oblivious because I didn't have anything to compare.
Exactly.
With.
Yeah.
So yeah, comparison can be a trap. But
definitely.
Then on the other hand, comparison can be a healthy thing when you look at an example of great health and fitness
exactly.
as well.
Yeah.
And I know that for myself personally, yeah. growing up like as a teenager, mm-hmm. if I'm talking from my yeah. own experience with body image, I thought it was completely normal as well to be really down on my own body.
Mm.
I remember really being self-conscious about my nose, about my thighs, and just really not happy with how I looked, and really wanted those tiny thighs that I could see in the models. But you know, I didn't understand the value either of mm-hmm. of working towards that too, like that I could create a goal of just being my fittest and my healthiest
mm-hmm.
yeah. To work towards as well. It just became yeah. more, oh, this is me and I don't like
right.
this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I think as long as it's healthy, it's not the I have to be like this. Because some people just aren't designed to be
yeah.
like that. And I think yeah. it would be boring if we were all exactly the same. Like
in the Barbie movie.
Exactly, like in the Barbie movie. Like we need diversity. That's what makes us beautiful. That's what makes us creation. You know, yeah. look at all the trees and they're not all stick thin.
Yes,
they're all different. They're all, yeah. you know, beautiful in yeah. their own way. And I think we need to embrace that more. Yeah.
That's right. So as I've grown and matured and being able to look at really positive influences, mm-hmm. I've come to realize the value of being healthy and strong mm-hmm. and fit, you know,
yeah.
as opposed to that's I have to great. Be a certain size.
Yeah.
Because that really is out of our control.
Yeah.
Or it's just really unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right, to,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that what you're doing is fantastic. And how do you think that you might continue being an advocate for, mm-hmm. first of all, body image, mm-hmm. women's body image, and then also for mental health?
Yeah. So I think I'd love to do some more professional development courses in how to help people with body image concerns as a psychologist, like going forward, especially Medicare has introduced more Medicare rebates for clients with eating disorders.
Right.
So they now get 40 sessions covered instead of just 10.
Yeah.
So that's
wow,
really great.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really great. So I'd love to do some more professional development to help
yeah.
People on the really far end of that, like eating disorders, because that's a really, really tough mental illness to try and treat.
Yeah.
It is really tough. So I think that would be great. Just doing more, more courses, more research. That would be really awesome if I could, because you get to do another thesis for your master's degree. So I'd really love to look into extending my study. And just looking in more detail, just ways, treatment options that you can utilize. And then as a psychologist, when I'm fully qualified,
In 2 years,
yay. Putting into practice those things that I've learned. Yeah.
Great. Do you think it might be easy or hard to find a psychologist position on the Sunshine Coast?
It's really easy at the moment.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, which is kind of a bittersweet thing to say, because it's sad that there's so many people out there who need help, but it's good that there's people reaching out, you know, and seeking support.
Yeah,
there's so many jobs on the coast, and there's new psychology clinics popping up everywhere, and the wait lists to see a psychologist can be up to 2 months. So there's a lot of need out there.
Yeah.
So, and it's expected to continue to increase over the next few years. So, yeah. Which,
what do they base that expectancy on?
I guess population growth as well, like as the Sunshine Coast grows and grows, there's all these new developments happening.
Yeah, true.
And I think mental health, it is on the rise because the stigma is kind of breaking down.
Lifting.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And so more and more people, that's why, and more and more males especially, are going out there and seeking support, which is really
great.
That's
so good.
Mm-hmm.
That's so healthy. Hey?
Yeah.
I've listened to podcasts where they've interviewed people who actually have made a commitment to just see psychologists for years and years, maybe even forever. Like, I've heard so many people say that they see a psychologist on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even people who see a wed, like a marriage.
Yeah.
Psychologist.
Marriage counseling. Yeah.
You would see a normal psychologist for marriage counseling. But yeah, people who see a psychologist for their marriage mm-hmm. on a regular basis too.
Yeah.
So in August last year, you yes. posted on Instagram about living with chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind if I yeah. ask you some more Absolutely. Details about that? Tell us about your journey with scoliosis.
Yeah.
And how has your faith helped you through that journey mm-hmm. as well?
Yeah.
Starting with when you were diagnosed.
Yeah. So I was diagnosed when I was about 12, but I don't really think I fully understood what it was till I hit puberty or whatever. Especially when I was about 15, I really started to notice, you know, scoliosis is a curvature of the spine. So it not only changes the way your body looks, but it changes the way it functions as well. So different muscles are used more than other muscles to try and compensate for, you know, where your spine is. And I had surgery at the end of 2017. So my spine's straight now, but I
yeah,
which is great. Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. It was definitely really, really, really intense surgery. A lot more intense than I actually expected it to be. And the recovery process, was quite slow. You know, you kind of have to learn to like walk again
oh, wow.
because your body's, you know, it's completely different. You've yeah. spent your whole life using certain muscles and never using other muscles. And then suddenly it's straight. And these other muscles that had never worked before are like, what?
Oh, wow.
How do I work? So I've still seen a physio regularly, just to help me get my strength back. And it's really great. I've noticed in the last month, I've really started to feel like myself again, which I know sounds really dramatic. Like it's been, you know, 2 years, but yeah, I've definitely started to notice a big difference now. Yeah, which just takes time. And I think with my faith, living with chronic pain, you have good days and you have like not so good days, but with your faith, it really helps you to have a heaven mindset. I always think, okay, let's have a heaven mindset. Let's think long term, okay? Not just in the here and now, not just, oh, I'm in so much pain. Like, because pain is a really consuming mindset. If you choose to focus on it, it can definitely consume your whole world. Mm. All you think about is, oh, pain, pain, pain. But when you choose to kind of like, I'm like a visual person. So I imagine myself kind of like drawing up out of my body and going up like into the universe and looking at everything that's happening and thinking, okay, me here and now experiencing pain is only a fraction of sand, you know, compared to what's happening in the whole universe. And it's not something that's always going to be forever and ever and ever. And just because I feel at pain in this moment does not mean that I'll be in pain forever and ever and ever, because there are good days and bad days. And pain is very much a mental thing as much as it is a physical. So when you've had, my physio explained this to me really, really well. When you've had pain for a long period of time with my scoliosis, my brain kind of blocks out like a section of my back. It's almost like my brain's like, this doesn't exist as like a protective wow. kind of instinct. So now that it's like not painful, my brain still thinks that it is painful.
Really?
I know. Isn't it weird?
So I was
going
to ask you, since the yeah. operation, do you still experience pain?
I still do, yeah. And it's because my brain is used to being in pain.
Wow.
You have to like train it to like, it's okay now, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. And there are certain things that are still like certain muscles that are still used to working really hard
mm-hmm.
that I have to learn to kind of do things slightly differently, or I guess what people would do normally if they didn't have scoliosis, to try and balance out my muscles. So there is legitimate pain, but there's psychological pain, which I am so curious to learn more about. Which I definitely would love to do.
How can you tell the difference between?
I know. I don't know. It's
yeah.
it's so, because in your mind you think pain is pain, and I didn't realize this until literally like when I looked into it, and when my physio was talking to me about it, she was like, "No, it's like it's so psychological, because when you choose to focus on like kingdom things, like heavenly mindset, the big picture." It's like you're taken out of that pain. It's the weirdest experience. Like, I don't even know how to fully describe it. And I don't think people who don't have chronic pain can ever really fully understand what it's like to have that, like, nagging pain, like, in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm doing my best to describe it, but yeah, I guess unless you have it, it's really hard to actually describe. But yeah, learning that it's actually a psychological thing. And I think it's also like a spiritual thing as well. Like praying, when I pray for like healing and wholeness, it's actually really crazy, the story of my surgery. I had booked in with a different surgeon at a different time at a different hospital and was going to have completely different type of surgery. Like it was going to go straight down the back, but I had keyhole. I ended up having keyhole instead, which is
You mean they were going to cut?
Yeah, they were going to cut the way down my back. I know. But yeah. I was praying for like the perfect surgeon, and my grandma, when she was still alive, her friend's granddaughter was randomly like, oh, I had scoliosis and I had surgery with this person. So she was like, oh, okay. And she told me about this surgeon, Dr. Askin. And I was like, I looked at, you know, his details and I was like, I want to go with him. He looks amazing. So we literally canceled my surgery. Like I was booked in and everything with this other surgeon. And we booked in with this new one. And it literally happened to be the same day a year later as this other girl who had her surgery, which is so crazy that it was like literally the same day. Because I remember she came to visit me in hospital and she was like, wow, on this day a year ago, this was me. So it was such a like a God thing though too, because he's like one of the only surgeons in Australia who can do keyhole, and he happened to be in Brisbane. Like so crazy. We were willing to travel literally anywhere to get it done, but he literally happened to be in Brisbane. And he was able to, like, literally almost fully correct it. I think it's, like, 19 degrees, which is tiny. It sounds like a lot, but it's not. It used to be, like, nearly 60. So go from, like, 60 to, like, 19 or 18, it's just, like, amazing what he was able to do. And so God blessed me with someone who he had gifted, you know, the ability to do that surgery. So I've been really, really blessed to even have had that surgery. And
so how come it took you so long to have that surgery? Did you have to wait until you were like fully grown adults?
Yes. Yeah. They recommend to do that, to wait. And I was seeing someone every 3 months, on the Sunshine Coast. He wasn't a surgeon. He couldn't do that surgery, but he was an orthopedic surgeon. He kind of knew a lot about it, but he didn't do that actual surgery because there's no one on the coast who can do that. And he was like, just wait a few months. Just wait a few months. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. And it kept on getting worse and worse and worse. And they said, okay, we should wait till you stop growing because once it's like fused, like that's it. You can't move it.
Oh, you shouldn't wait until you've stopped growing.
No, you should. Because once it's fused, it's not going to grow anymore. And obviously, you want to wait till everything's kind of grown out. So he was like, you should wait till you've stopped growing. And he was kind of like against. So it was weird because he was kind of against surgery. He was like, no, you know, it's a really invasive procedure. Like, the recovery period is a really long time. You should just
deal with it.
Yeah. Which was really hard when like a surgeon is telling you not to have surgery. Yeah. It's just really conflicting.
Yeah.
And then I got to the point where he was like, oh, okay, it's really bad. If you keep letting it get worse, it's going to affect your heart and your lungs, and you won't be able to have kids.
You're like, wow.
And I was like, well, obviously I'm going to have the surgery then.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit like,
frustrating.
It was frustrating, to be honest, that I, you know, suddenly he was all on board surgery. But yeah, God really aligned everything perfectly, literally and figuratively. And he taught me a lot about trusting in him, even when in the moment it doesn't feel right, you know, and having that heavenly mindset, look above where you're at in this moment. And that's, that really opened my eyes to trusting in his plan and his purpose.
So what was it like growing up with scoliosis, mm-hmm. and even before you even knew that you had it?
Yeah, I always knew that, like, my body was a bit different because my back always hurt, and I was kind of like, is this normal? Like, do people usually have sore backs
all
the
time? Did you look different as well?
Yeah, so my ribs were kind of, like, slightly shift. One was slightly, like, forward.
Yeah.
And my shoulders, one was slightly, like, lower and the other one was slightly higher. So you could definitely, like, see it if you were looking closely. Mm, yeah. Like, I noticed people's backs, but most people wouldn't really be able to tell. Only if you were really, like,
looking.
looking for it. Yeah, and I always kind of felt like, my body's just, like, doesn't feel comfortable. And even just sitting down, like, one part of my back was obviously out. So even just sitting in a chair, one was like, it was so uncomfortable. And I remember just being like, ugh, this is, and it was frustrating because you're in your body, but you're like, I want to get out of my body. This isn't a comfortable place for me.
Yeah.
And so growing up, it was actually really difficult. And I don't think my parents fully understood, like, the extent of it, because they were always like, oh, you know, my dad had scoliosis, but he didn't have it. He didn't have it very severely.
Okay.
So he was kind of like, it's not that bad. Like, you get a bit of pain, but it's fine.
Yeah.
And I kind of was like, no, and I'm really in pain all the time. And I guess, I don't know, they kind of, looking back, they were like, oh my gosh, we are so sorry. We didn't, like, I guess, pay more attention to it. They were kind of like, oh, it's fine. You won't need surgery.
It would have been hard to know whether you were being a dramatic
exactly.
child.
Yeah.
Because I know I was dramatic when I was a child about any kind of pain.
Exactly. I mean, they probably did thought like, oh, it's fine. Just, you know, just deal with it. It's okay. I'm sure it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is hard to tell. So I don't blame them, obviously. Like, they wouldn't know. If you don't have it, you don't know what it's really like. But, yeah, I just remember as a kid just kind of being like, I'm never comfortable.
That would be really frustrating.
It was, yeah. And then realizing, bringing the whole body image thing, oh, I look different from even just normal people. And, like, let alone models, you know. It's kind of just taking it to another level. But yeah, I think that really kind of, I don't know, it was, I guess it was healthy that my family maybe didn't put so much attention on it, because maybe if they did, it would have been my whole identity, you know. It was kind of a part of me for a long time, and I guess it still is, but in a different way. It's more like a journey of overcoming rather than, you know, a journey of limitation. But I guess maybe if they were always like, oh, are you okay? Oh, this and that, then maybe it would have kind of escalated it.
I love what you just said there with it being a journey of overcoming rather than a journey of limitation.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah. God, you know, he really carries you through stuff. He doesn't let it just be a block in your journey, in your path. He's not like, okay, this is as far as you're going to go. He's like, okay, no, let me leap you over this hurdle. You know, let's climb this mountain together. You're not just going to stop.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you came to know Jesus?
I was about 11 years old. I grew up in a Christian family, so I was kind of always like Christian. But the moment I had kind of like a revelation, I was at youth group. And I was 11. I probably wasn't supposed to be there.
But you get a few young ones.
Yeah. My brother was like a youth leader, so I was like, snuck in. So I remember just being like, I want this to be my own faith, not like my family's faith. I want to take this journey on for myself. And I kind of haven't looked back since. I think being a Christian is just the best thing ever, because you're like, okay, God, I'm so glad I don't have to deal with this all in my own strength.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah,
it's definitely. Like, I'm so glad I've got you to help me get through this, because if I didn't, I don't know where I'd be, honestly. So yeah, being a Christian, my faith, it's just, he's my rock, and it's amazing. It's really taught me a lot about loving others as well, coming back to like volunteering and even psychology, being outward, like Christ is the perfect example of showing love to other people and literally being on the front lines, you know, being a leader in the community isn't like sitting back. It's getting involved, getting amongst it, getting amongst even people who are really, really facing, you know, like homeless people at soup kitchen who are really, you know, facing a lot of hardships and really just being like I look at it as like holding their hand and being like, you know what? I got you. We can do this, you know, together with God, obviously, but like, I'm here for you. And I think some people really, I've needed that in my life. And I think everyone at some point in their life, they just need someone who can hold their hand and just say, it's okay. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm cheering you on. I'll help you, whether that be a meal, a conversation, a safe space, group therapy, you know, psychology therapy, whether that be in research and finding, you know, podcasts and meditations and this and that. That it can just feed out into all these things. Prayer, obviously. Yeah, there's so many different ways to help.
To help people see that they're not alone.
Hey? Exactly. There's so many people who are incredibly lonely, and you see it a lot working in a psychology clinic. There's a lot of people out there who are really broken. They're going through literally like hell and back. And we're called to be there for them. And to be a light on the hill. And I think when you get amongst people who are really struggling and you're like, there's hope, you know, let me help you show you the way, be an example. I think that's what we're called to do. And living that out practically is really something I don't take for granted, something I take very seriously. And it's like a commission. It's what we're called to do. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to wait till I have fully qualified professional. Let's start this now.
Yeah.
You know, let's put stepping stones in place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Thanks.
So do you have any tips for maintaining good mental health for students while they are studying?
Yes, definitely. I think self-care is huge, and it's something that we always just like put on the back burner and just think, no, I'm not going to worry about this. I don't have time to worry about it.
I'm strong enough. I can cope without it. I'm strong enough,
exactly. But I think we all need it.
Yeah.
And I would schedule it in when I was at uni, and I'll be doing this when I start uni again. I literally, like, good time management is everything. I used to, like, schedule in meeting friends, like a work meeting. I would be like, 11 a.m. till 12. That's all you got. That's what I'm giving you. Let's do
That's only an hour.
Literally.
We're out of here.
and then scheduling in self-care, and not just self-care is sometimes, I read this online and I was like, I love it. I wish I could find the quote, but self-care is not just like, I think it was self-care is not just bubble baths and chocolate. It's doing the hard, gritty stuff that needs to be done to take care of yourself. It's not leaving stuff till the very last minute and then being stressed. It's being really practical and knowing yourself well enough to know when you need to put up boundaries, when you need to say yes, and when you need to say no. And I was like, that's such a cool way of looking at self-care. Because, I mean, it is good to do pamper yourself, you know, take time to relax and unwind. But it's really good to be like, I'm not going to just go out and spend all my day on the beach. You know, it's good to start doing little bits of work here and there to set yourself up so you're not stressed and crashing and burning. And I was like, whoa, that's a cool way of looking at self-care. Discipline.
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 Yeah. So it sounds like you're really good at time management. Can you give me some time management
tips? Oh my gosh. I think I've had to be. I've been at uni for like 4.5 years. You've just got to like, and I've learned from mistakes. Don't get me wrong. I haven't always been like this. But I've just learned to just really know how you work, like, and always allow extra time. I feel like people love to be like, oh, I'll get this done in only an hour. And, you know, it might take 2 hours because maybe the internet's not working, or maybe you found the assignment harder than you originally thought it would be. Maybe your email isn't working, you know, all these little things that happen in life, allow extra time to do your work. I always actually give myself an hour extra. And that way, even if things are going smoothly, you're like, great, an hour extra that I can smash this bit out and get on top of it. And yeah, just know yourself. I know that I have to set myself little deadlines because I like the adrenaline of like pressure, getting this in by this deadline, getting this in by this deadline. And I know if I leave it actually all to the last minute, I get very overwhelmed.
So, I know that feeling.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, I've done definitely in the past, so I've learned from mistakes. Mm. That's how you learn best.
Have you ever pulled an all-nighter?
I have, but it was in school. It was in high school.
Oh.
I was one of those classic, like, straight-A students, took school a bit too seriously.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and I went to a concert, and I had an assignment due the next day. And I went to the concert, I came back home and kept working on my assignment and then went to school. It was a presentation.
Yeah.
Went to school and then presented the assignment and then was like, I'm done.
Fell down and they hit it.
Yeah, literally.
Was the concert worth it?
No, that's the thing. It was a One Direction concert and I didn't even like One Direction. I went with my friend. She loved One Direction. And I remember the concert being like, why did I even come to this? I don't know any of the songs.
What am I doing here?
Yep, so it wasn't even worth
That's
it.
That's like I went to a concert, a U2 concert.
Oh my
People
gosh.
People are going to hate me right now listening to this. I had friends who hated me for having a ticket because I was like, great, I'm going. Who's U2?
Yeah, literally.
Like I had no idea who they were.
That was like me with One Direction. People are probably going to give me hate for being a white girl.
Maybe not.
A classic white girl. Gosh.
No, maybe people would give you hate if you loved One
Direction. Yeah, true.
Okay, so just for fun, what is your favorite dessert and what are you listening to and reading right now?
My favorite dessert is creme brulee. I'm obsessed. Yum. And maybe because Valentine's Day this Friday, maybe Fraser will take Fraser if you're listening.
Hint,
Fraser. Maybe you'll take me to that French restaurant that we went to last time, and I didn't get to have creme brulee.
Why didn't you get to have creme brulee?
I do make the same mistake every time I eat out. I order an entree and a main, and then I'm so full. I can never have room for dessert.
Oh, yeah.
So this time, if we go, I won't order an entree.
So the trick is to share the entree.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that always gets me when the entree is bread because I just love
I know, bread, right?
Bread. Yes.
Yeah.
And then I'll have like one or two pieces and then I'll wait because I'm waiting for the main.
Yeah.
But I'm like, looking at the bread, it's right in front of me. I'm trying to be self-controlled because I know I'm eating into my dessert space.
I know. It gets me every time I make the same mistake.
Dan makes that mistake every time too. And then I'll be like, we are definitely having dessert. It's my favorite part of the meal. And then he'll look at me and be like, can we share one?
I'm
No. This is mine.
Never share dessert.
This cheesecake is mine, baby.
Yeah. And what I'm listening to at the moment, I actually am obsessed with podcasts. Fraser got me into them.
Yeah.
The Savvy Psychologist is a really great one. I've been listening to, she gives tips on like what not to say to people who have anxiety.
Wow.
Good. Which is really great.
Yeah.
And reading, I just finished reading Big Little Lies. You know the TV series? It's got like Reese Witherspoon and Nicole
Kidman. I've never seen it, but
it's really good. It's kind of suspenseful, which is great. I love that kind of like mystery, like whodunit kind of book. So, yeah.
Made it into a TV series.
They did, yeah.
So have you been watching the TV series as well?
I did, and they made a second season as well with Meryl Streep in it. And it was really good.
Yeah. Love Meryl Streep. Anything with her in it.
I know. Yeah. She's amazing.
She is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us and chat with us about just the value of mental health and self-compassion.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure being on here. Thank you.
Before we go, would you like to pray for our listeners?
Yes, definitely. All right. Dear Lord Jesus, I pray for anyone who's listening to this that you'll just help them wherever they're at in their journey with their faith or in life if they're going through any struggles or difficulties. I pray that you'll comfort them, that you'll hold their hand and that you'll guide them. You'll give them peace and you'll give them clarity about how to guide them through this season of their life. Pray that you'll bless them as well. In your name, amen.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you know somebody who would really benefit from listening to this episode, then click on the share button and send them a link. Also, I'd so love it if you could take the time to quickly subscribe and write me a review. If you want to get in touch for any reason, DM me on Instagram at mel_linem. Talk to you soon.